Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the January 29th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll start with the first page stories. Tuscola City Council. Restaurant to open in former Denny's building by David Porter. Tuscola Mayor Dan Kleiss announced Monday that the old Denny's restaurant in front of the outlet mall has been sold and will be reopening as a restaurant serving American fare for breakfast, lunch, and supper. He said the restaurant will be managed by Decatur resident Endrit Zekjiri, whose family operates similar restaurants in Shelbyville and Mount Zion. Zekjiri's uncle bought the building and operates a restaurant in Mount Zion. Zekjiri and his wife Leonida currently operate Lakeview Family Restaurant in Shelbyville. The Tuscola store will be called Star 57 Diner. Zekjiri formed a limited liability company, Star 57 Diner LLC, in November 2024, according to state records. Kleiss said Zekjiri has applied for a liquor license for the restaurant. He noted that the breakfast place did not renew its liquor license. Kleiss also gave a shout-out during Monday's city council meeting to Dr. Bill Hemmer, who retired from the fire department after nearly 30 years of service. Also Monday, the council heard from Eric Shangraw of GFL Environmental in Peoria, which is a waste hauling company. Shangraw said the city's waste pickup contract expires at the end of October and his company would like to bid on the service. He said GFL is based in Canada and is the fourth largest solid waste service provider in North America with a processing plant in Rantoul. He said the company picks up recycling in Urbana and has municipal contracts with Farmer City, Leroy, and Rantoul. We're headed this way, he said, and we'd like to continue to head this way. He said it would be ideal if the city bid the contract a couple of months before it expires to give the company, if they are successful, better time to acquire new totes. He said that when starting a new contract, the company would invest in all new totes. When asked if his company provides more services than waste management, he said at the level both companies operate, they're about the same in terms of service. He spoke at length about the company's recent investments in East Central Illinois. Kleiss said he found the presentation to be nice and interesting. In other business, the city council approved a pay request to CNS companies for the water main project in the amount of $49,000, approved a change order and pay request to the company for $34,000 on the same project, declared various vehicles and equipment to be surplus and authorized the sale of them, approved new water rates as previously reported, approved the annual employee assistance program agreement with Carl Health Incorporated in the amount of $910, approved the annual audit engagement letter with Larson, Woodyard & Henson, LLP in the amount of $35,000, up due to an increase in federal grants, according to Treasurer Alta Long, approved the purchase of backstop netting for the South Baseball Diamond in the amount of $5,000, and updated the fire department roster to reflect the departure of probationary firefighter Bryce Van Lonken. The surplus property, according to City Administrator Drew Howell, includes a 2014 F-250 Old Water Department truck, a 2012 Ford F-350 with snowplow, two-leaf vacuum machines, and a 1969 Alice Chalmers road grader. The next article comes from the Tuscola School Board. Accept donations totaling $4,210 by Ben Crane. The Tuscola School Board accepted $4,210 in donations in varying amounts from 19 different donors for North Ward Kids, Help a Child, High School Cheer, and Golf. The board heard a presentation from Richard Knofsky regarding the school's industrial arts program, which was revived for the school year. Knofsky, who teaches the program, explained the timeline from the summer to now updating board members of what students are doing within the program. The board approved the seniority list for certified and non-certified staff for 2024-2025 and the 2025-2026 risk management plan, the Vision 2030 resolution, the destruction of executive session recordings older than 18 months, and the recommendation to continue to seal minutes from current and all previous executive sessions minutes. North Ward principal Jared Wallad noted that David Schweikart advanced to the Special Olympics state competition in Bloomington after winning gold in basketball skills. He also said that Wellness Week is from February 10th through 14th and Joe's Pizza Day is February 7th. East Prairie principal Jared Van Osdell congratulated the 8th grade boys basketball team on a conference championship. He also congratulated Will Petrie on winning the spelling bee. Lydia Koch finished second and Sophia Reifsteck finished third, respectively. He also wished luck to the cheerleaders competing at the IESA State Series in Bloomington on February 12th. Tuscola High School principal Justin Bozarth noted in his report that 66 students earned honor roll while 58 earned high honors in the first semester. He also congratulated Braden Taylor on being named January Rotary Student of the Month. Bozarth also congratulated Drew Sterkel on being named Coach of the Year by the Illinois Track and Cross Country Coaches Association. He thanked Tony and Sarah Vitale of Joe's Pizza for donating slices for students at a girls' basketball game. He also said that public is invited to attend the Tuscola Music Boosters fundraising concert on February 22nd. Finally, the board approved the resignation of Ted Minger as high school football assistant coach and the retirement of Sarah Schoon as high school ag teacher at the end of the school year. The board also approved the hiring of Nick Bradshaw as East Prairie throws coach, Philip Weinke as junior high science teacher, and Brent Budd as junior high social studies teacher. The next article is from the Arthur Village Board. We'll start charging for fingerprinting services, by Ariana Cherry. Arthur Village Board President Rod Randall shared with the board at the January 20th meeting that it was the 22nd anniversary of Matt Bernius's involvement with the Board of Trustees. Bernius accepted Randall's congratulations, commenting he'd been a part of the village since he was about 15 years old. Randall also thanked the Public Works Department and Grant Corum for their work of removing all the snow from the past two snowstorms. Arthur has recently... During new business, Police Chief Elliot Tinnen brought up the need to start charging a fee for fingerprinting service. With Arthur being one of the only departments in the area offering this service, many individuals have been coming to the area for non-criminal related fingerprints. They often were either too early or arrived late to their appointments. This often takes officials away from their duties or have to tend to the service during after hours. After some brief discussion, members agreed on charging $5 for residents, $10 during a scheduled monthly time, and $20 for an expedited fingerprint service. Chief Tinnen also reported an increase in calls for service compared to last year, including lockouts and a few accidents. He also alerted the public about the circulation and production of fake temporary license plates after a question from Randall Tinnen commented that it was difficult to tell these plates were fake using the naked eye. The chief also reported there had been a recent uptick in vehicle burglaries and assured the board that patrols would be increased in affected areas as some of the residents' vehicles have been burglarized twice now. Other items discussed and voted on? A bid of $14,900 was approved for Foremost Truck and Trailer Specialist to do the upfit for the police department truck, as the current truck is 5 years old, and Chief Tinnen stated that a lot has changed in the past 5 years in the police sector. Board approved to donate the remaining village's K-9 fund balance of $706 to the Douglas County Sheriff's Office for its K-9 unit. Expenditures were approved for $76,000. Approved to abate the 2012 water sewer refunding bond for the 2024 levy year. Approved to make the final payment of $122,000 for the Arthur clarifier improvements at the wastewater treatment plant on Grunlow Construction Company. Approved final payment for the SCADA CPU communications upgrade at the Arthur Water Treatment Facility in the amount of $9,400 to Engineered Solution Midwest Incorporated. Grant Corum and Michael Ellsbury were approved to attend the annual IRWA, Illinois Water Rural Water Association, annual technical conference in Effingham on February 18th through the 20th in the amount of $380. Board approved voted to make a revision to the local tourism grant program. Individuals who are interested will need to come up with a project and then bring it to the Economic Development Committee. There need to be at least 30 days advance notice prior to the event. Revision was made to the Economic Development Assistance Program. Applications must be submitted first to the Economic Development Committee and then will be presented to the Village Board. They voted to proceed entering into the intergovernmental agreement with other local taxing bodies for the eradication of the poison hemlock issue along the drainage ditch within the city's corporate limits. And from the Village Board, Villa Grove School Board approves Illinois Vision 2030 program, by Ben Crane. The Villa Grove School Board approved Illinois Vision 2030 at their January meeting. According to the Vision 2030 website, Vision 2030 represents the second time education stakeholders fostered collaboration and unity among educational organizations across the state to create an advocacy framework for public education in Illinois. The first initiative, Vision 2020, resulted in numerous achievements, including the passage of the evidence-based funding formula, Illinois Balanced Accountability Model, and Post-Secondary Workforce Readiness Act. The board also approved a final reading of PRESS Plus Issue Number 117. In elementary school, Principal Bobby Beck's report, he reported that the school is currently in the process of MAPS winter benchmark testing, which measures students' growth from the beginning of last year. He also noted that Emma Elson won the Spelling Bee, followed by Faye Dentz Chandler and Alice Mitzdarfer. The Douglas County Spelling Bee is being held on February 14th. Junior Senior High Principal Sarah Jones congratulated Luca Shadwick for being named January Student of the Month in her report. She also congratulated him on scoring his 1,000th point in basketball. Jones also congratulated the junior and high school dance teams for qualifying for state. Finally, she thanked Hunter Dorman and Teresa Luddington for a successful band and choir concert. The next article, Hammond native Kent Brown reflects on the legacy of Illinois athletics in a new book by Ben Crane. After more than 35 years working in college athletics, Kent Brown's retirement in 2023 marked the end of an era, but it also sparked a new chapter. Shortly before his official departure, Triumph Publishing reached out with a proposition, write the Illinois edition of their popular 100 Things series. Brown, a lifelong Illini fan and seasoned sport information director, couldn't resist the opportunity to pen a book that would encapsulate the rich history and culture of Illinois athletics. Writing a book has been a long-term goal of mine, Brown explained. I'd always wanted to author something, but it wasn't until the publishing company approached me that it became a reality. The book, titled 100 Things Illinois Fans Should Know and Should Do Before They Die, offers an insider's look at the moments, players, and traditions that have shaped Illinois sports. From basketball to football, Brown's meticulous research and personal anecdotes bring the Illini's storied history to life, celebrating both the iconic and the lesser-known figures who've contributed to the university's athletic legacy. The concept for the book came together quickly. Triumph Publishing had already completed similar projects for other schools, but Illinois was missing. With a timeline that stretched from the summer of 2023 to early this year, Brown dove into the process, coming up with an initial list of over 120 potential topics. After much deliberation and feedback from friends and colleagues, he pared the list down to 100 chapters, each one focused on a specific moment, player, or tradition. The challenge was narrowing it down, Brown said. There are so many great moments in Illinois athletics, and not every one of them could make the final cut. But I tried to include a good mix of the old and the new with a focus on things that will resonate with fans today. Though Brown had lived through many of the events covered in the book, he still took great care to ensure accuracy. Our memories can play tricks on us over time, he explained, so I had to double-check everything, scores, dates, opponents, to make sure the details were correct. Even with first-hand experience, he knew the details, like specific scores and game moments, would need careful validation. While much of the content came from his personal knowledge, Brown also relied on archive material and research. The university has an incredible archive, which I had access to every part-time after my retirement, Brown said. I was able to dig deeper into some stories and find new information that I didn't know about before. It was a fun process of discovery. In addition to well-known sports figures, Brown wanted to ensure the book reflected the human side of Illinois athletics, the stories that might not make the headlines but resonate deeply with the fan base. This included his own experiences, such as the infamous Green Room story from 2005, when the Illinois basketball team members found themselves processing their incredible comeback against Arizona in the Elite Eight. I was the only non-player standing there when it happened, Brown recalled, and I had to laugh when Darren Williams said, "What the hell just happened?" It was a moment that really stuck with me, and I'm glad I could share it. Despite the historical scope of the book, Brown focused on making the content relevant to the modern-day Illinois fan. He avoided going too deep into distant past, opting to highlight more recent stories and figures that would engage contemporary readers. That said, some Illinois royalty like George Halas and Red Grains couldn't be left out. "You can't talk about Illinois sports without mentioning them," he said. Growing up in Hammond, Brown was a lifelong Illini fan. He fondly recalled sneaking a transistor radio under his bed to listen to Illinois basketball great Nick Weatherspoon break the school's basketball scoring record. "It was the mid-70s and there wasn't much TV coverage, but I listened to every game," he said. "Even back then, I knew this was something special." Now, as a part-time lecturer in the College of Media at the University of Illinois, Brown continues to contribute to the world of sports communication. He teaches a class on sports media and public relations, where students get the opportunity to discuss current PR issues while learning about the inner workings of the sports world. "I'm lucky to have this opportunity," he said. "It's a great class and a fun way to stay connected to the world of sports." Through his career as officially behind him, Brown is not done making an impact. He continues to serve as an athletics historian, assisting with history projects and archival work at the university. "It's a great role for me," Brown explained. "I get to stay involved without the grind of working 60 hours a week. It's a perfect balance." As for the book, Brown expressed pride in what he had accomplished. "It was a significant undertaking. 100 chapters is no small feat," he said, "but I'm proud to have done it, and it's incredibly humbling to know that people are going to read something I've written about a subject I care so deeply about." For Illinois fans, 100 Things Illinois Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die is not just a book. It's a celebration of a rich, passionate sports culture that has left an indelible mark on the university's history. For Kent Brown, it's a fulfillment of a dream and a fitting capstone to a career dedicated to the Illini. In the last first-page story, Arthur native Noah Yantis escorts President Bush to Trump's inauguration by Ben Crane. In the fast-paced world of Washington, D.C., where political careers are often built on a foundation of connections and hard work, few journeys are as remarkable as that of one former intern who rose to the ranks to become chief of staff for a member of Congress. Noah Yantis's paths, spanning nearly a decade, has not only placed him at the heart of the legislative process, but also led him to an unforgettable experience escorting former President George W. Bush during the inauguration of President Donald Trump. The story begins in 2014, when Yantis graduated from Arthur High School and entered Illinois College in Jacksonville. By 2017, as a senior, he'd already secured a pivotal internship with Congressman John Molinar of Michigan's 4th Congressional District. Little did he know that internship would evolve into a full-time position, marking the start of a journey that would eventually lead him to the role of chief of staff. 2 months into the internship, they offered me a position as a staff assistant, he recalled. It was a full-time, paid position, and I happily accepted, even though I still had 6 months left to graduate. I worked out an agreement with the college to finish my capstone paper remotely. From 2017 to 2019, he worked for Congressman Molinar first as a staff assistant and later as an agricultural policy assistant, but his political career didn't end there. After Molinar, he moved on to work as agricultural legislative assistant for Congressman Mike Bost of Illinois' 12th Congressional District. By May 2019, he had transitioned into the legislative director role for Congressman Jim Hagedorn of Minnesota's 1st District, a position he held until Hagedorn's tragic passing in February 2022. It was a big shift for me, he said, reflecting on the challenges of his tenure under Congressman Hagedorn, but it was also an opportunity to step up and learn. Shortly after his passing, I moved into the role of executive director for the Congressional Western Caucus, a group of rural and western Republicans. Now, as chief of staff to Congressman Dan Newhouse, the individual has reached the pinnacle of his career, working closely with lawmakers in the influential Appropriations Committee. Yet his rise is not only a testament to his dedication and work ethic, but also to the power of being in the right place at the right time. Yantis himself, involved in the inauguration of President Joe Biden through the Joint Congressional Committee on Inaugural Solemnations, JCCIC. Initially, volunteers were sought for various duties, and he was assigned to escort ambassadors, a role that would lead him to an unexpected encounter with former President George W. Bush and his wife, Laura Bush. It just so happens that I was offered the role by a friend who was the director of package movements, he explained. She asked me if I wanted to do it, but she couldn't tell me who it was for, and I said yes, and it turned out to be President George W. Bush and Laura Bush. In his assigned role as their escort, he spent several hours with the former president, assisting him from his motorcade to a holding room at the Capitol before the swearing-in ceremony. He shared candid moments with the Bushes, including lighthearted conversations and even the humorous observation from President Bush about his height. President Bush said, "I was a tall son of a gun. I'm 6'6", so I guess it's just funny hearing a former president make a joke like that," he recalled with a laugh. Despite the occasional banter, the experience was surreal. He described how for nearly 30 minutes, the former presidents and first ladies gathered to chat before heading to the ceremony. While most of the conversations were casual and brief, the honor of being in the room with so many political figures left a lasting impact. "I just couldn't believe that I was there walking with a former president, escorting him to the ceremony. It's a moment I'll never forget." For him, the experience encapsulated the serendipitous nature of his career. Sometimes it's not about being the biggest player or having the right connections or stepping into opportunities as they arise. "Politics is a lot about knowing the right people," he acknowledged, "but it's not just like I pulled a big favor. I just ended up at the right place, and being in that room with the Bushes and other former presidents, it was a huge moment for me." Yet his perspective on working in Washington, D.C. and the political environment remains grounded. He admits that the dramas depicted in shows like House of Cards or Designated Survivor aren't quite representative of the real day-to-day workings of Congress. "I'd say Veep is probably the most accurate portrayal equipped. It shows the humor and the behind-the-scenes interactions and how much staff members rely on their staff." Despite the drama of the Washington politics, his focus remains on the work ahead. He's optimistic about the future, noting the current political climate as a time of potential for implementing a conservative agenda, especially on issues like border security, the budget, and farm policy. "It's definitely a more collaborative environment than when there's a split Congress, and even though we have small minorities in the House, we're hopeful we can make real progress," he said. As his career continues to evolve, he remains committed to his path in Washington. From a humble intern to chief of staff, his journey is a testament to the power of persistence, dedication, and sometimes a bit of luck. I couldn't have done any of this without the support of my family and mentors, he said, and I'm just thankful for every opportunity that's come my way. We'll move now to the obituaries. Samuel C. Bontrager, 69, of Purdon, Missouri, passed away at 2:20 p.m. on Thursday, January 23, 2025, at Springfield Memorial Hospital in Springfield. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, January 28, at Penn Station, 122 East Progress Street in Arthur. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, January 29th at Penn Station. Pastor Lonnie Gingrich will officiate. Burial will follow at the Arthur Cemetery. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Peggy Jo Vandeveer, 91, of Arcola, passed away at 7:30 a.m. on Friday, January 24th, 2025 at the Oaks Manor in Oakland. A memorial service will be held Wednesday, January 29th at 11 a.m. at Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main Street, Arcola. Todd Nolan will officiate. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the services from 10 to 11 a.m. at the funeral home. Burial will be at the Arcola Cemetery. Janet Hare McGrath, 82, of Chattahoochee Hills, Georgia, passed away on Saturday, January 25, 2025, peacefully in her sleep. Graveside funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. on Thursday, January 30th at the Hugo Cemetery in Hugo. Pastor Bob Silvanick will officiate. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Jerry Nadine Dunnigan was born on July 3rd, 1958 in Tuscola, the daughter of Ruth and Jacob Gingrich. Our beloved mother, wife, grandmother, sister, aunt, and friend passed away in Davis, Illinois at her residence on January 17th, 2025. Visitation was held on Friday, January 24th at Schrader Funeral Home, Arcola. Funeral services were held Saturday, January 25th with Pastor Dick Miller officiating. Burial will be followed in the Arcola Cemetery. Robert Howard Ponder, 85, of Wellington, passed away peacefully at Newman Rehabilitation Center on January 19, 2025 at 6:30 p.m. following a long battle with dementia with Lewy bodies and Parkinsonism and syndrome. A celebration of Robert's life will be held at a later date. Online condolences may be made via heligoschraderfuneralhome.com. Nancy Elaine Clark, 74, of Arthur, passed away at 11:11 a.m. on Thursday, January 23, 2025 at St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur. Visitation honoring Nancy's life will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. on Friday, January 31st at Penn Station, 122 East Progress Street in Arthur. The family requests casual dress, comfortable clothes, or your favorite Illini gear. A memorial service will be held at a later date. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Kurt L. Mathis, age 81, of Gardner, formerly of Tuscola, died Wednesday, January 15, 2025 at Morris Hospital. As per his request, cremation rites are being accorded and there will be no services at this time. Another article, PBS local station channels will be available to stream free for all Prime Video viewers in the U.S. PBS and Amazon announced that more than 150 local PBS stations and the PBS Kids channel will launch ad-free over the coming months as Prime Video Fast offering. This marks the first time this program will be available for free on a major streaming service free to customers across the country. WEIU-TV is now accessible on Prime Video via the app, web, and Fire TV. Your channel can be found in the Live TV section under Entertainment. It also currently being highlighted in the feature genre. Viewers who are not Amazon Prime members will still have free access to PBS programming under the Live TV section within Prime Video. Unlike Hulu and YouTube TV, Amazon does not have static EPGs. Placement for your channel on the program guide is going to be personalized to each individual viewer based on their watch history, the viewing habits of similar users, and other factors. Additionally, PBS Distributors, a leading distributor of public media content around the world, will offer two new fast channels, PBS Drama and PBS Documentaries. These channels will be available exclusively for a limited time on Prime Video starting November 26. PBSD will also offer a pop-up fast channel featuring rotating selection of classic PBS shows starting with Reading Rainbow. This launch marks a significant milestone for PBS in delivering a curated lineup of high-quality programming from member stations to a broader FAST audience, particularly at a time when two or three U.S. viewers use FAST platform. FAST channels on Amazon are accessible through Prime Video and Fire TV. Non-Prime users will get a free access to PBS programming under the Watch for Free section within Prime Video. PBS member station will be able to tap into leading streaming services to offer quality programming viewers know and love for free, said PBS's Chief Digital and Marketing Officer, Iyer Rubenstein. It's part of the PBS commitment to make trusted content available to all households across as many platforms as possible. We thank Amazon for giving PBS member stations a new and exciting way to grow their digital footprint while engaging with audiences old and new. We're delighted to bring PBS's trusted, high-quality programming to our FAST channel, said Ryan Pizzoli, head of Prime Video Marketplace. We have put together one of the most exciting FAST offerings today for Prime Video customers, driven by a highly specialized experience and a leading selection of channels featuring fan favorite series, movies, news, sports, and more. We know our customers will be excited to discover that their beloved PBS member stations and two new PBS FAST channels are now part of our growing offering. PBS, PBS Kids, and local station content is also available from PBS.org and PBSKids.org, as well as PBS app and the PBS Kids video app available on iOS, Android, Roku, Apple TV, Amazon Fire TV, Chromecast, and smart TVs from Samsung, Zumo, and Vizio. Local PBS station members are also able to view an extended library of quality public television programming via PBS Passport. For more information about PBS Passport, visit the PBS Passport FAQ website or contact your local station. Another article, 4-H donates to animal shelter, by Willa Bratton. On Monday, January 20th, Tuscola Barnyard 4-H Club participated in a day of service for the community. They went to the Douglas County Animal Shelter with donations, including blankets, toys, and food. The club was also able to cuddle the husky puppies and kittens that were there. That Friday, the Coles, Cumberland, and Moultrie Douglas County 4-H Clubs also joined the Silver Star Skate Center in Mattoon to have some fun skating, as well as donate more local animal shelters. The Barnyard 4-H Club enjoys helping the community as well as having fun in the process. 4-H teaches young people how to use their heads, hands, heart, and health to help and serve their community. Tuscola's Barnyard 4-H Club meets the third Tuesday of every month at 6:30 p.m. at the Douglas County Ag Center for all those who are interested in joining. And there's an article on sports commentary, Brown's New Book is Pretty Freakin' Good, by Ben Crane. This is a little bit different of sideline scoop this week, so bear with me. Last week there was a mysterious book-shaped package on my desk, and I didn't know what to make of it before opening it. However, inside was a letter in a book, 100 Things Illinois Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, from the publisher, Triumph Publishing. I knew of the book because, of course, it was written by my former supervisor, professor, and close friend of mine, Hammond native Kent Brown. I've mentioned him in a previous sideline scoop titled The House of Galloping Ghosts Built. For a little background, Kent is first and foremost one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet, but also a walking encyclopedia of Fighting a Lion athletic knowledge. I first met Kent on my first day in the sports information department back in college about 4.5 years ago, and we quickly bonded over recounting some of our favorite Illini memories. His 36 years of experience in the department trumped my 18 years of life. So let the rest of this entry serve as a book review. Safe to say, once I picked this book up, I found it hard to put down. 100 Things Illinois Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die will test your knowledge of the Illini and most certainly expand upon it. From George Halas to Terrence Shannon Jr., from tennis to track, and from campus bars to campus burials, there's a little bit of everything in this book. Now, I will admit, it might not be an easy read for some. The book's pages are jam-packed, full of history, statistics, and stories you may never have known about without it. However, Kent has always done a good job making the information as digestible as possible. His love for Illinois athletics can be felt from the words on the page. I pride myself on useless Illini knowledge, and this book will be my reference moving forward. The book serves its purpose very well and covers a lot of ground in the right amount of words. Overall, I'd give it a solid 8.8 out of 10. An article, fundraiser for Lovington Mapping Project. Lovington has enlisted the help of Mapping, the Future of Your Community program, through the Illinois Institute for Rural Affairs at Western Illinois University to take a proactive approach to planning for community and economic development. The mapping program is a participant-driven strategic visioning and planning process whereby local leaders and citizen volunteers create a long-range vision for the future of Lovington and a plan of action for achieving it. A series of 5 3-hour sessions involving a minimum of 25 community members will be held to discuss the questions. Where are we now? Where do we want to be? How are we going to get there? How do we make it happen? And how do we make it happen and maintain a momentum? During the course of these 5 planning sessions, participants will identify 3 to 5 priority goals for the community, an action plan for implementation, and break into groups to begin to work on their goals and projects. And that is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye and see you again next week.